Call the meeting to order. Given the weather, and I'm not sure where Representative O'Neill is, but I'm assuming she's struggling as everybody else, and we've got some people missing, I'm just going to take a brief 20. Let's return at 8:20. Oh, is that all right with everybody? Okay. All right. We're going to go into recess until 8:20. Republicans can caucus, will caucus.
No, they won't.
Yeah, have some coffee. But let's just give everybody a chance to get here.
And then I would keep track of what I actually did so I could remember when I was placed.
So it's like, so it's like,
yeah. The place has gotten away at that. So,
yeah. Morning.
Right. 20 extra minutes. I'm glad. I have two bills up.
You know, actually, that one is awesome.
What's the bill?
It's,
go breathe.
I'm a
No, it doesn't. You're talking about the heart.
Okay.
Heart.
You're talking about the heart attack. Yeah, no, with the PTSD going hard.
It's a due process.
Yeah. My brother's the...
No, that was a
Whatever.
reminds me of the good, bad, and the ugly. He's either a priest or a bad.
Yeah. He's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. I was in, like, maybe on the job.
It's to me, it's a
and the captain that oversaw the administration. Calls me up on my cell phone at like 10 o'clock on a Saturday. It wasn't my weekend at all.
I agree with you.
And he goes, Zerwas, I just want to let you know that
just for the sake of your promotion. We were doing that yesterday.
So what's up?
Last
and he goes, well, we just finished up the search for the Columbia Heights.
And we have to make the point. I understand. I want to say
that. In this case, he said,
at some
because
point.
Nick is my fucking boss, and he's going to have my badge, and I'm going to have my shit.
There are times when it
gets all right, Captain.
You're kind of bordering.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for laying on
being disrespectful.
That might have happened. I not claim that.
I'm eating
we haven't talked in years.
At that point.
Why are you here? Why are you not on the other side? The north, I think. Do something different.
Yeah.
And he's in there a couple times recently.
Neither of you said that.
No shame about him.
No.
Because, you know, I got a lot of relatives that are cops.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
No, it's so funny. So, Joe Senior.
So you know, that's on the record.
All of his children get one.
I think that's good.
Please, and one. I think it's one of those felons.
I see Joe.
Yeah.
I never really thought of him.
He's
your uncle.
He's my great uncle. My dad's uncle. His health is well. I haven't seen him.
Oh, he's doing great.
Good.
He's really good.
Just asked the question.
He scared us for a while there.
He kind of disavows that a little bit.
I'm not sure if I know who that is.
A perfect answer.
Hey,
is that Zerwalk? It might be a different pronunciation.
Zerwalk.
Hey, great to meet you.
Nice to meet you. And then, if you're going to like the state party convention or state central or anything coming up, just shoot me a text or something. I'll give you another beer or something.
Okay.
But let me know if you need anything.
Yeah.
All right. Good to see you guys.
Yeah.
Well, that amendment, we would have been the cost of the chair not to have the hands-free bill.
Oh.
To track the number of people who've been cited. So it's all about Phil. Texting anybody that was black, white, rich, poor.
So we have an amendment that need to ask their immigration status.
A man after my own heart. You should see the press release I'm putting out today for a new bill I'm getting drafted.
Yeah. What are you doing?
You're going to want to hop in on this one. So, in Minnesota, it is a crime to file a false police report.
Yes.
In Minnesota, it's a misdemeanor crime. In Minnesota, if you file a false police report, a legendary police officer broke the law, committed misconduct. It's a misdemeanor, but it's sentenced under the gross misdemeanor sentencing guideline.
Oh, okay. Mm.
That's an escalator.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amending that to not only include police officers, but if in the Pulse police report, you allege a hate crime occurred that didn't occur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we have a poster boy for that right now on the national news, don't we?
How odd!
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What interesting time.
Yeah, fantastic. You know, I haven't seen it. Have they come to any conclusions on that?
He's lawyered up. He's refused to cooperate. And
yeah, I agree.
Now the other thing that they're saying is the two individuals that flipped on him also are providing information that he was involved in the mailing of the threat letters as well.
I noticed this morning that they came out with his criminal background.
Yeah. False information to the police.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's good. Let me know what that is.
I'm guessing that there will be relevant statutes that will be open with an opportunity for us to have a conversation before.
Oh, yeah.
At a later date.
Yes, I don't think I'll
get it here. Oh. No, but, you know, sometimes you just have to do
what
you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of them that's never going to get. It didn't happen, but at least it's there.
Yeah, talk about it.
Yep. See, the Indian guy is right in front of me. But it seems to be going to get. Just put it. What time were we supposed to come back?
8:20.
Okay. We'll see. You want to take any bets on what we make at 8:20?
I'm going to take 8:27. What's your
8:29?
Okay.
Gosh. Yeah. Only Ned could come up with.
Isn't. It's an undesignated appropriation. It's a bill.
Okay.
The very last. Okay. But, and I had this in the bill summary. I have this in the bill summary. It classifies, the very first part of the bill adds the ombudsman to the section of statute covering salary limits. So all these people are at this top salary, which is 120% of the governor's pay. Mm-hmm. The governor is currently 136. There it is. So it covers 136, so 153 would be. And they usually start with this one.
Oh, yeah.
Because they know.
Yeah, who appoints us?
Governor.
Yeah. I'm working on a bill for the man to help. It is the legislative auditor in an audit report.
Minutes from the Excel.
No way.
Wow. No, I'm not kidding.
You have time to go put stuff in your office if you want.
I see nobody else staring there.
I texted you.
Oh, no, babe.
Yeah, I didn't want to look at my text.
No, that's fine. You were.
My car is fantastic. All these little cars with bald tires are like, slide it all over. They couldn't get up the hill by the...
He gaveled us in, and he says they went up to caucus. We just figured we'd hang out.
We're caucus.
Yes.
I bet you...
But you do have time to...
Go to my office.
Go to your office, and, you know, because he said 8:20. Well, yeah.
Well, Nick isn't
going to
make it in.
He's here.
Yeah. Did you stay overnight?
He don't. He left at 5:30 this morning and got here at 7. He said... I left home at 5. No, 5:30.
It took me 5 minutes.
Are you across the street? Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, I could have walked here faster than driving here.
I'm across 94. I'm not at home.
It was all because of the hill by the...
I left home at 5:40. I got here at 6:15. So it wasn't bad.
That's still coming down pretty good. It's coming down really heavy, and the hill is just treacherous. It's just like... You know, all these little tiny cars are sliding all over and no traction. The ball tire people.
I see they have other big cars. Yeah.
So there's
this old ice. You know, where it's on the freeway. It just started.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep, sliding into each other.
Yeah. And the semis. Oh,
well, that's not one way to get moving or stopping. Well, I'm going to go up to my
office and look down. Take your coat off.
I'm looking at the clock going, it can't possibly take literally 30 minutes to go up the hill.
Right.
Yeah. Just letting the clock up to grab. I picture that you must have had hills. Or you had enough speed.
It falls through.
I have brand new tires, and I was fine. In fact, and then Eric was ahead of me, so I was like following him, and he's got this really fancy cattle pack that have like traction. I have some. I don't have any problems.
Yeah.
I'm guessing they didn't have test fires or anything with all this.
There were a couple people we had in the audience.
You know, snowing so heavy, I couldn't actually see what was ahead. I couldn't see more than 6 car lengths ahead.
They said that, yeah. They said it was supposed to be a big cell moving forward. It was supposed to be so heavy.
I couldn't tell, like, what exactly was happening. Then I'm like, oh, you know, they're all like turning their wheel like this, and like just trying to get a little traction somewhere.
Well, it looks like every school.
Yes,
that was where my question was from. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have several people that I have not wanted to share.
No. Well, maybe the office is kind of bad.
For us, it's
all goes down. Appreciate it.
Yes, being a resident of Maple Lake, I'm aware
of that. We get right to Maple Lake there.
The hasty
bars to back up.
Yep, the hasty exit.
Yeah.
Marion, how was it? Bad.
It was 30 minutes from the XL Energy Center.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Nobody could get up the hill. I'm sitting there going, I have tires. Just buy, you know, just buy tires.
I'm tired. Live in Minnesota.
Right.
I'm tired.
Our commutes to the, there's a little anger every once in a while.
Yeah.
And for me, it's people going too fast.
It was just spin out, and they were, you know, doing this, and both lanes were blocked with people that couldn't move.
Well, for what it's worth, the Capitol sidewalks are very nicely shown.
I'm going to pull there are concerns about how it is written.
Okay.
And so we're going to take it back to the drawing board.
Very good.
So I didn't want that to be a surprise either.
Thank you.
Okay. This place is getting warm. You want to get on my guy here.
Usually the CA
could put this out. We'll talk about that. Basketball coach that had a bad ear. You could always tell when a parent was coming up to complain because he was
dressed up.
Okay, we're going to bring the meeting to order. Thank you for your patience. Want to make sure everybody had a chance to get here. Probably should talk into the microphone myself. We have a quorum. Is there anybody that has perused the minutes and would like to move them?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes of February 13th.
Representative Poston moves the minutes. Thank you. Just to let you know, the first bill on the thing we're going to pull, there's some concerns about the language, and we're going to go back and try to straighten that out. Like to apologize to the people that showed up to testify on that but we want to get it right. So okay, the next bill, my goodness, Representative Wilmot will be taking the gavel because it's mine, and we're holding this over.
Yes.
Okay, I'll make the motion. I guess I'll get the table.
All right. Would the chair like to make the motion to move House File 1399?
I would. Thank you.
Excellent. Are there any testifiers?
Mr. Chair, can we do the amendment before we go to testifiers?
Let's move the amendment before we...
All right. Representative O'Neill moves the amendment. Any discussion? Representative O'Neill moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion?
My amendment?
Would you like to say a few words about the amendment, Representative O'Neill?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it is just including the Senate and House committee chair minority leads and majority leads so that the legislature is informed of the report as well. That's what the amendment does.
Is the author in favor of the bill?
The officer.
or the amendment.
Yeah, he likes the bill. And we'll happily take the amendment.
All right. So we'll now vote on the amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. All right. Hearing no opposition, the amendment A1 is adopted. All right, Chair Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe at this point everybody on the committee is now a co-author on this. As we heard in our visits to Stillwater, we think this position is vital for bringing back safety and security to the institution. It gives the residents at the facility a outlet for communication that they'd very much like to see, and again, when we had the focus groups, they talked about that, and actually the custody staff talked about improving communication. So I'm hoping this will do that. I'll turn it over to the testifier now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sam Smith, and I'm the Public Policy Coordinator for NAMI Minnesota. I'm here this morning to speak in support of House File 1399, which would reinstate an ombudsman for corrections in Minnesota. People with mental illnesses are much more likely to be incarcerated, and their mental health needs are less likely to be met in prisons and jails. Implementing diversion strategies, increasing mental health staffing levels, and improving mental health services are important. But NAMI Minnesota also believes that restarting the ombudsman program will be very impactful for Minnesotans with a mental illness. Following a prisoner rebellion in 1972 in New York State, Minnesota created an ombudsman program to be an advocate for Minnesota correctional facility residents. Excuse me. However, in 2003, budget cuts led to the dissolution of Minnesota's corrections ombudsman, leaving an important gap in our corrections system. While we are very proud of our advocacy work, NAMI Minnesota is more than a mental health advocate here at the Capitol. In addition to offering support groups and educating people across Minnesota about mental illnesses, NAMI Minnesota also operates a helpline where people with mental illnesses and their families contact us when they need support and advice. In many cases, we hear from families whose loved ones are in jail or prison and are facing challenges navigating the criminal justice system. These stories are heartbreaking, and despite our best efforts, there's often very little that we can do to help these people. I have received numerous letters from correctional facility residents who believe their rights are being violated. This often includes challenges they face receiving appropriate mental health care and especially the right medications. Families have called us about their loved one in segregation and the impact on their mental health. We do our best to register these complaints with the appropriate staff at the Department of Corrections, but we do not have the authority to investigate. An ombudsman would fill this gap and be able to investigate concerns and take action. People with mental illnesses can be vulnerable in these settings, and it's important to have a third party involved. Recently, a mom contacted us. Her son was in jail for a nonviolent crime, and he lives with a mental illness. She had talked to him on the phone and was very worried that he was suicidal. She tried to call the jail to raise her concerns, but couldn't get through to anyone. Luckily for her, my boss, Sue Abderholden, knew the jail administrator and called him. He did check on her son, and he was actively suicidal. That call could have saved his life. But we can't rely on Sue. We need an office to refer people to someone and who can investigate these people's concerns. In a different county or with a less receptive jail administrator, this story could have been very different. That's why we need an ombudsman for the jail system as well as corrections. NAMI Minnesota strongly supports House File 1399 and urges your support to make sure that Minnesotans residing in a jail or prison have someone to go to with concerns and questions about their treatment and someone who can investigate these concerns. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, for your testimony and for sharing your perspective with the committee. Members, are there any questions? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as we're reestablishing the ombudsman, can you explain if there's any differences between this ombudsman, and any other ombudsman that is in the state of Minnesota, and if so, why? And then the second question I have is, does the ombudsman have, for the corrections, does it have the power to subpoena non-public documents from the BCA or from DHS?
That's a great question. We're actually lucky enough to have a former corrections ombudsman who will be testifying as well, who could probably speak to those concerns more precisely than me. But the corrections ombudsman does have the authority to seek documentation and investigate, but they can only make recommendations about policy changes.
All right. Thank you. Members, any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Smith. Now, if T. Williams is here and would like to testify, please come forward at this time.
Hey.
Please state your name for the record.
My full name is Theophilus Williams, but I'm known generally as T. Williams. I seldom use that first name because people have difficulty pronouncing it and more difficulty spelling it. So I'm T. And I am really pleased to have this invitation, this opportunity to come before you. It's been a long time. And you can.
Mr. Rose, would you please state your role?
Well, at this particular time, I am retired from I was served the term on the Minneapolis School Board. And before that, my last 16 years of employment was as a senior research associate for a nonprofit called Rainbow Research. For the past 5 or 6 years, I've been spending much of my time doing oral history research, looking at my focus was on Minnesota Ombudsman for Corrections and the Minneapolis Urban Coalition. I played a critical role in both of those institutions, and what I've been doing is trying to capture as much historical information from as I possibly could, including interviewing some of the people who were critical players in that process. And as I said, right now I am retired. I've been spending a fair amount of time checking in with groups and individuals who had an interest in seeing the ombudsman get reestablished.
Thank you. Members, any questions?
Yeah.
Representative Mariani.
If I may, I have about 2 minutes worth of.
Please proceed.
I was the Minnesota Ombudsman for Corrections from 1972 to 1983. I was appointed by Governor Wendell Anderson to fill that office, the first of its kind in North America. My testimony will relate to my experience during my tenure in office, which I hope will be beneficial to you as much as you consider this legislation. House File 1399 is essentially the same legislation passed by the legislature in 1973 and amended in 1976. The Minnesota office was operational between July 1972 and January 2003. I believe it was most successful. The office operated with a full-time staff of 8 people and at least one intern throughout most of my tenure. The Minnesota program was the first of its kind in the country. Therefore, we didn't have anyone else to consult. Every time we acted on an issue, we set a precedent. It was obvious to me that we had to approach the situation with maximum flexibility. I recognized that there was not much I could do to change anything in the correction system without cooperation of the staff, administration, and inmates in the institutions. I needed the confidence of each group if any grievances were to be successfully resolved. In reestablishing the ombudsman, the state can draw upon 30 years of historical experience of the program. My first task in starting the program in 1972 was to build trust, establish credibility with the key stakeholder groups in the correction system. First task now will be to reestablish trust, credibility with those groups. Do that by being open and establishing appropriate lines of communication throughout the system. Do not make unrealistic promises. Commit to functioning with a low profile. Challenge the system and the individuals in it as often as necessary, but don't use the media to resolve conflict. Avoid creating situations from which all cannot gracefully retreat. A key factor in reestablishing the office will be staffing. All of the staff in our office at that time served in the unclassified service, except the secretaries, and served at the pleasure of the ombudsman. This gave the ombudsman maximum flexibility in selecting staff, and it allowed for a high degree of accountability. We had a tough beginning. It took all of my efforts to survive. It was not uncommon to have heated conflict with prison warden at Stillwater. Each one of us were trying to prove we had the authority we had. I soon realized that I needed to find a way through the conflict or the program wouldn't survive. I reached out to the warden, and we both decided that we could benefit from one another if we were focused on mutual beneficial outcomes. Those conflicts were essential. They allowed for the highest level of honesty and integrity to emerge on both sides. I believe an asset I took into the job that served me well was that I did not have a background in corrections or worked in the Minnesota correctional system. I had no preconceived notions about Minnesota's correction system. I had no access to grind. I had no personal or professional relationships in the system to protect. I had no assumptions about what could, should, or should not be done. Credibility is what will make the ombudsman program viable. The credibility has to be earned. It cannot be conferred. The rationale for an ombudsman seems to be obvious to me. Any system that has the potential to be as oppressive as prison should have some external checks and balances. The ombudsman ought not to be offered as a means of riot control, but as an opportunity to enhance the quality of justice available to people in prison. An enhancement of the quality of justice within the system may very well have a positive effect upon the prisoners. They know that if they are dissatisfied with the internal grievance process, they may appeal to an external source independent of the correction system. It is important that the ombudsman is independent of the correction system. The ombudsman is not an advocate. The ombudsman is accessible to the staff as well as the prisoners. We had some problems early in the beginning of the program in getting both prisoners and staff to understand that we were not advocates for prisoners. The ombudsman enters the grievance process as an impartial and allows the facts uncovered by the investigation to determine whether to support the complainant's position. It may have seemed to some staff members that the ombudsman was an advocate, but one must recognize that the point of entry was -1. Allegations had been made, and the ombudsman is attempting to determine their validity. Once validity is established, the ombudsman is in a position to advocate for resolution. The ombudsman will not resolve all of the conflicts in the prison system. I'm not sure that anything will as long as the people who fill our prisons bring their conflicts with them. Prisoners come from communities where conflict exists, and it's unrealistic to expect they will react differently in an environment designed to produce and exacerbate conflict. I would be glad to take any of your questions.
Chair Considine.
Thank you. I just want to say I don't think I've ever heard a better definition of an ombudsman. That was really great. And if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, has your question been answered?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to know if this ombudsman position is any different than any other ombudsman we have in the state of Minnesota, and if so, why? And I don't know that that was necessarily answered. I also have a question on page 6 as well, referring to the data that's available. And I'll just get that question out there, too, so maybe both could be answered. On line 6.8, it's talking about data maintained by an agency, but it doesn't define which agency we're talking about. And so just curious as to which agencies that would be. And also the path, since it does reference Chapter 13, is this going to be going to judiciary, civil law, and data practices so that they can deal with that data practices part of it?
Mr. Chair.
I can answer the question about the other ombudsman. No, this would be unique. It would be different from the others because the other offices have, to my knowledge, not established by an act of the legislature. And the other thing, too, it will be it will not be lodged in the Department of Corrections. Will be separate and apart from corrections, independent of corrections, and there will be no review of its authority or actions by corrections.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the question about the path. Is this going to be going to civil law and data practices, since it does reference the Data Practices Act, Chapter 13, on page 6, lines 6.6 through 6.10?
I believe it will be laid over right now, and we will have further discussion on that.
It would be my preference that it would also go to civil law, since it does have data practices concerns. And then my question wasn't answered as well about which agencies are included. It doesn't reference which agencies.
Mr. Chair.
Again, in 6.8.
Department of Corrections and the Office of the Ombudsman.
Okay. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. Good morning, Teacher Williams. It's good to see you. It's been many years. I've had the privilege to interact with you over the years, but it's been a while. And I have to say, I just had, well, not just, but in December, I had a lengthy breakfast with someone we know and we've worked with in common, John Pupart, who both sang your praises and also gave some advice on corrections, including the need for us to move back in this direction. And so my first question is, are you available to be the ombudsman?
Mr. Williams.
Unlike Bernie Sanders, I'm available to consult. but not take on the task. I think that if I may say a little bit about that, that's going to be a critical, if this legislation is passed, the next big challenge is selecting the right person. When I was appointed, there was an ombudsman commission that all of this was done by executive order of the governor. He created the Ombudsman Commission by executive order and charged that commission with the responsibility of screening potential candidates and making a recommendation to the governor for someone to fill the position. And that commission consisted of the several commissioners of the state. The Attorney General was on that commission. The Commissioner of Corrections was there. Human Services Commissioner was there, and there were several others plus a representative or so from outside of the state system, and they screened candidates and then made recommendations to the governor. And my name was sent to the governor. I was interviewed then by the governor's staff. And the governor, and was named to be the first ombudsman.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, that triggers another question for me, but let me ask my first question then. So you went, you shared with us, and I agree with Chair Considine, lessons learned over the years, which I think most of us would find quite wise. Things like, not using the media, being resolution, objective fact finder, focused on resolution, understanding that not all things are going to be resolved, and then being real wide-eyed about working in an environment where there are a lot of things that come in through the door that are really outside of the immediate impact of our correction system. But even with that, and this could be a long answer, but just a quick thought, one of the things that I know Chair Considine is interested in, and actually I think there's strong interest on both sides of the aisle here for quite a few years, we're just trying to figure out how to get there, is really pushing on perhaps my term, a next generation of criminal justice reform. And so obviously there's an overlap with what happens in corrections relative to that kind of a goal. So really my question, and I, again, it could be a long answer, but just a short thought, is do you see the relevancy, the importance of this office in terms of informing criminal justice reform, or should those two remain separate?
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, I see it as being important that that this office participates in that process, because it will be in a strategic position through the work of the office, the grievances that come to you, that will indeed identify some challenges within the system, and to be able to analyze those and make recommendations. We, when I was in office, we several different times studied particular issues. We did a special report on the mental health services inside the prison and made some specific recommendations to the Department of Corrections and to the prison as to how to approach those, because what was happening, the tendency inside the prisons for people on both sides not to believe anything anyone says. Everyone is a malingerer, and on if you're a prisoner, and if you're an officer in the prison's view, that every officer is out to do the men. And so that you're living in an environment where there is no trust, and so that things happen and go unattended. We had, during my term there, that was 1 year that we investigated 8 suicides in a period of 1 year, at one at St. Cloud and 7 at Stillwater. And the reason why we chose to investigate them is not because we had any authority to address that issue in terms of any suspected criminality, but we could look at what was leading up to that, what happened before then, and to share that information with the institution and with the policymakers that could help address it over the long haul, so that this becomes could become an important tool for those who are interested in criminal justice reform.
And Mr.
Very good, Representative Mariani.
Just a quick follow-up with that, and you know, a few of us have been over to Stillwater the last few weeks, and in our last visit, we certainly picked up, high levels of anxiety and tensions, and it seemed like two groups missing each other, kind of going past each other, and we're worried about that. You mentioned earlier that when you were selected, that there was a commission, and so this might be a question for the chair as well, but it seems to me that some kind of a standing group like that, not just for the selection of the ombudsman, but for being part of the resolution process, you know, resolving issues, might be a wise thing to do. And just you, for instance, sharing the issue around mental health concerns, which we know is a big issue in our corrections facilities for many of our inmates, residents who are serving their time. It seems to me that that really begs, you know, high-level, strong conversations, you know, with, for instance, the Commissioner of Corrections and Commissioner of Health and Human, and perhaps some other departments. So, again, just some quick thoughts about the possibility of having a standing commission, not just for the selection of the ombudsman, but to be part of that reform effort and intervention efforts?
I think it's important to have some place to go to where those issues can be discussed. I'm going to share with you my own personal bias now about commissions, working with commissions, and there has to be clarity about what the role of that body would be, and it cannot be have any operational responsibilities, because all of that has to be lodged within the office itself, so that it could be a place where the ombudsman could go to share issues and concerns, policy issues and concerns, to give added force to the recommendations. But part of my experience has been that unless you have the right person in the office and working with the commissions, that it can morph into something where there's some kind of struggle for who's in charge. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened when we were in office, because all of this was so new at the time, I had a great deal more latitude than I think someone coming in now would have, because there was, no one knew what was supposed to be done. So that was a good thing for me, because you couldn't say that it's not supposed to be done that way, because you can point to some other place where it's being done differently. But we had great relationships with the legislature, in the House and the Senate, and that we were invited to give reports to the appropriate committees. When we did our special investigation on the mental health issues at the prison, we reported to the legislature on that. Now, that could create again another problem, because what you're talking about is you're challenging the Department of Corrections.
Sure.
And, you know, they aren't going to be excited about having someone tell them that they are doing some things wrong. So that there has to be that relationship of credibility and trust that is built between the ombudsman and the corrections itself. And that takes time. When that is there, we were at a point where the Commission of Corrections and some of his top officials at the time would make referrals to the ombudsman, because they knew that they could get the situation examined without getting too many other partial issues tied into it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I just simply want to thank Mr. Williams for teacher Williams for your public service to the state of Minnesota and over the years, and then I also want to thank you for your availability as a consultant at this point in terms of your service to the state of Minnesota. Thank you much.
Yeah.
Really appreciate your work.
Thank you, Representative Marion. I don't know whether, you know, I sent an attachment to the staff here. What I wrote an article back when I was in office that was published in Trial Magazine called Between the Keeper and the Kept. Yeah, I'm going to leave this here, and I think that if you make copies of it, each of you, if you're interested in getting an understanding of how the office was working at that time and some of the issues that were being addressed and the value of credibility being established, you know, it trust, because, and the final thing I want to say, that when I first came on, and I went to Stillwater, Bruce McManus was the warden, and he wanted to establish that he was the warden, he controlled the prison, and the legislature said that the ombudsman had access at any time, you know, and I'm in the process of wanting to test that, so you know, you go out there at any time, and then he wanted to prove that he could keep me up, and so we finally I said, well, I'm going to make the first move. So I suggested that we get together and meet maybe on a weekly basis to talk about these issues. And he grabbed at that. But then he got me, because I allowed him to select the time and the place. And he selected 6 o'clock in the morning at Big Ben. And so I said, well, I'm going to do that, and I did. Well, what that helped was that he was offsite, and he he could be open and honest with me about what he liked but did not like about the program, what we were doing, and the challenges that he was facing. And what it came to is that there were some things, because there were some things that he truly wanted to get done, but it wouldn't go over well if he initiated it. And so we talked about how the ombudsman could be supportive of that and the like. And then the other challenge that we had was that the officers thought that we were advocates for the prisoners, and that we were naive and would not understand when we when someone is trying to put one over on us. So those are things that it's important to work through, and we were able to do that.
Very good. Anything else, Representative Mariani? All right, Representative Poston, before we get to your question. Oh, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some corrections to some statements that were made earlier. I just want to get that on the record as well, if I could do that at this time.
Very good. Yep. I was just going to ask that the your question about what agency this bill would apply to, I was going to turn to House Counsel for a clarification. But
wonderful. So we'll do that, and then I have a couple other things, too. I know that the testifier had said that the legislature has not established other ombudsmen. I think that's what he had said, but there are actually two statutory references that I have, two that I could find. One is Roberta Opine, who's a lovely lady who's come to see me many times. That's the mental health ombudsman, and that's in 245.92 in statute. And then another statutory reference for the Board of Aging Long-Term Care Ombudsman is 256.974. So those are two examples where the legislature did, in fact, establish two other ombudsmans. I think there are more out there, but I haven't had time to peruse the statutes to find them, but just to get that on the record. And then if nonpartisan staff could explain which agencies are involved, that would be wonderful as well.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair and members, the definition of agency is found on page 2 of the bill, line 14 to line 23. Drafted broadly, but it's focused on secure detention facilities either operated by the state or that are licensed or inspected by the Commissioner of Corrections. And so when you see how it's defined, it's a range of statutes from section 241.90 to 241.95. So whenever that term is used within that series of statutes, it could be any of these listed or facilities or entities under definition. So when you look at the data practices provision on line 6 and it refers to an agency, you could fill in any of those places, and the ombudsman would be authorized to request the, as it here, private data on individuals or confidential data on individuals when it's needed for their mission.
Thank you. Anything further, Representative O'Neill?
I do, actually, in the same line of thought, is the subpoena power. Maybe we should talk just a bit about the ombudsman and his subpoena power and how far-reaching that is, and if there's any consequences if someone is not doesn't comply to the subpoena. So in statute, we deal with things a little differently depending on who has the subpoena power. So I'm just curious as to how far-reaching is the subpoena power, and are there any ramifications for that person if they do not comply?
Could House Counsel please speak to this?
Mr. Chair and members, that language is on page 3, line 28, which is clause 8 of the enumerated powers of the ombudsman. And it is far-reaching in the who they can issue the subpoena to, but there is a clause at the end of that on lines 30 to 32 that provide protections to those who have concerns. They could go to a court and object to the subpoena and invoke their rights to not incriminate themselves and other constitutional rights that they may have.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Thank you. That's all I have for right now, and I do have a follow-up at the end.
Okay, very good. Oh, Mr. Chair, Mr. Williams.
Yeah, may I comment on that? The issue around subpoena power, we have that there, and my take on it when I was in office, it was something that I did not, we never used it. I thought it was important to have it there, because when you get to the point of having to use it, you're really challenged, and you've gone through everything, and there probably aren't many other alternatives. We held three or four formal hearings, and we invited people to participate at the hearing. We did not issue a subpoena. They were aware that it could be subpoenaed, but I thought that it would be more effective for us to invite them, because I didn't want to create this, didn't want to make this a legal procedure. That is the other challenge that is in this office, is that because some of the prisoners that approached us wanted us to pursue a legal strategy for remedying their situation. We had to disavow them of that immediately. And it was also among the reasons why I tended to stay clear of hiring attorneys to work for me. We did have law students as interns, but had to tell them they were not there to practice law, because that's when you tend to get into trouble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think we really would like to have you as a consultant, because I think the guidelines that you are outlining really make a lot of sense. But if the power to subpoena is there, Representative O'Neill's concerns are something that we need to address before we go forward.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, Representative Considine, Chair Considine. I mostly wanted to know how far-reaching they were, and it literally says they have the subpoena power to subpoena any person, which is fine. But I think it's good to know and get it on the record, because subpoena power, we have subpoena power. The legislature has subpoena power, but it depends on the follow-up. So if someone doesn't comply, then there's different levels after that of what happens after. And I was more curious about that, as in, you know, do they have the power of the court to actually enforce the subpoena? And there's different levels of that. So that was more so the question of not necessarily who they could subpoena, because it's very clear in the bill, but what happens after if they do not comply. So, you know, do they have the full force of the court or not, or somewhere in between? So that was really, I'd like that question answered, if someone could answer that.
Mr. Chair?
I would defer to House.
Would House Counsel please speak on this?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, could you restate your question?
Sure. So I was asking about the subpoena power. So if they subpoena somebody, and it says they can subpoena anybody, and then they can go to court and they can, as you stated, as it's in the bill, they could state that their civil rights are maybe violated, like you had said, but so if they do not comply with the subpoena, like, the court has the power to put them actually in jail, right? So I don't know how far reaching the subpoena power is and how it's written. The legislature can't throw somebody in jail. So if we subpoena somebody, we don't have the power to say, well, if you don't come, we're going to throw you in jail. But the court does. So if you're not in compliance with the court, they could find you in contempt of court and they could put you in jail. So I'm just asking, how far does the subpoena power go?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, members, I agree that could be litigated to that point. I think it'd be interesting to hear from Mr. Williams as to whether he had an attorney general appointed to help him if necessary, because that would be competing resources for the state to appoint an attorney to represent that agency in enforcing these actions. The other matter, of course, is that any person that wouldn't likely need to hire an attorney to defend them if they wanted to contest the subpoena, but without, that wouldn't be at the government expense. That would be a personal expense.
Representative O'Neill.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Considine, there's been conversation about us needing an ombudsman. There's also in the bill on line 3.3 an assistant ombudsman, and then there's been a couple of comments about staff. So it just makes me want to ask you, has a fiscal note been asked for, and do you know when we can expect that or what the approximate cost of this office would be?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, we had a discussion about that the other night. We've asked for a fiscal note based on some preliminary data that I thought was a little high, about $700,000. That's me setting up the office, getting the equipment and things. But we're going to get a fiscal note on that. So, but that was the preliminary, was about $700,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Very good. Now, Representative O'Neill, your follow-up question.
Thank you. I was going to ask the author something similar as to how you envision the Ombudsman Office to be and how many staff and sort of the cost behind that, and you sort of alluded to that, but, it does talk about, like Chair or Representative Polson said, the assistant ombudsman and some staff, and just wondering the chair's idea of how big you think this office will need to be effective.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I would say that we're going to look at what we historically had and try to set it up along those lines. Right now, again, the bill's going to be laid over, and there are a couple of things that, frankly, I want to get qualified to talk to Chair Lesh about your concerns there, and your questions on the subpoena, I think, are critical to be resolved before we move on. Again, I do like Mr. Williams' answer to that. I would hope that further ombudsman would follow his lead, but if we're granting the power for subpoenas, we need to clarify that and make sure that we have that ironed out, because if they have that power, we need to make sure that we got it cleared up.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Considine. And, just something to keep in mind is when we had the ombudsman before, we had considerably less folks incarcerated. So that's why I was asking the question, is because we now have a much larger scale. We have 10,000 at any given moment that are incarcerated. And I'm not sure if this goes beyond just the Department of Corrections within our facilities or if it extends farther than that. When you look at agencies, it could be, much further reaching than just the 10,000 that are incarcerated. So I was just curious as to the scope and if that thought process had come through yet, and something that we can just sort of discuss as a committee, how big we think the Ombudsman Office would need to be, which is, again, kind of why I asked the questions about where their jurisdiction starts and ends, so we know how large and how many folks. So from my reading, it's much more, I think, than just the 10,000 incarcerated, but it's halfway houses and any folks that are underneath the purview of the Department of Corrections is how I read it. But, yeah, okay, so that's, and if you look at probation's parole, conditional release, and incarcerated, that's 120,000 or so.
Goodness.
So
that is quite a bit.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I was envisioning the 10,000, and that's frankly what I've been looking for. As we go forward again, I think maybe if we need to address that, and it may be, maybe I'm incorrect on that 700,000. Maybe that we will never need every bit of that. Goodness gracious, we keep coming up with some good questions.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. That's why I'm here. I just want us to think about it, from all the aspects, which is why I have this line of questioning today, just to see the scope, who they are, taking care of and making sure that their rights are being protected and all of that. So we need to know, I'm pretty sure it's not just the 10,000. As I read the bill and as we've had this discussion, it looks like it's all those that are underneath the jurisdiction of Department of Corrections, which is much more reaching than just the 10,000. So something to think about as we move forward. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair, any follow-up on that?
No, I would have to agree. My vision was for the 10,000, and again, as we've talked about, hopefully that we're going to start reducing that number. That would be ideal, so I'm hoping that some of the things that we do will help reduce the number, but you're right, we should be considering everybody underneath the Department of Corrections as being eligible for these services. So we'll keep that in mind going forward.
All right. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, you know, as long as we're being creative about possibilities here, and that's a good reason. It's a good use of a committee, right? But so this question is to Chair Considine. In light of some of the questions, you know, regarding, particularly regarding the subpoena power, you know, that invokes, you know, the rights of individuals, regardless of who they are, whether they work in the system or, you know, folks who are serving their time, and also in light of the potential conflicts that may be inherent within the Department of Corrections. It sounded to me like, you know, Mr. Williams, you know, had an art to that approach, but not all of us possess that art. So I'm wondering whether or not, you know, as we seek to fund, you know, this this office through the Department of Corrections, whether you might be open to having it actually administered somewhere else, let's say the Department of Human Rights, whose business is, in fact, to objectively pursue, you know, the civil rights of individuals. So just a thought, and, you know, if you care to share any thoughts on that, or we can just continue the dialogue. But again, the idea is, as opposed to having it totally administered within the Department of Corrections, perhaps have the Department of Human Rights administer it.
Mr. Chair.
Actually, I'd like to hear Mr. Williams' thoughts on that.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani. The Ombudsman, as I understand it, would not be administered within the Department of Corrections anywhere. It essentially, what you will be creating is a separate department in the executive branch as it is. It could another option that you have, as it exists in some other places, it could be in the legislative branch, so that the report would be to a committee in the legislature, and so that just as the executive branch reports to you, this office could report to you. But in the executive branch, it's the report is to the governor. And so that the office would have the same relationship with the governor as, say, the Department of Human Rights or Human Services, and that the because if you put it in any other department where the resources are coming to it through that department, then it does not have the level of independence that is needed, because if there's conflict between the department and the ombudsman, the one that controls the purse strings also controls the outcome of the process. So that what this would, as I read the legislation and as it was set up before, it was a separate agency, and it reported to the governor. And it had a relationship, a very close relationship to the Department of Corrections, and the hearings came through the same committees that the Department of Corrections had to go to.
Representative,
Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate you know that those thoughts and advice that I think you've articulated strongly. You know, the principles of our principle of an independent, you know, fact finder and conflict resolution agent. However, you know, particularly in light of the question around fiscal notes, one way, Mr. Chair Considine, to think about the fiscal note issue might be, in fact, something that doesn't look to establish a whole new office, if you will, really focusing on the function of it, designing the independence, dynamics, and then allow for the administration of that office to lie within an existing entity. And my thought around the Human Rights Department is because precisely to minimize, the conflict that may arise within the Department of Corrections, and clearly human rights, a entity that reports directly to the governor and, through their commissioner, and one whose duty is to objectively advocate for the rights of all individuals that might be involved in any, pursuit of the ombuds person. But just a thought, I'd certainly love to continue to have this conversation with you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, there's actually an office of the ombudsman, and I would think that they would fall in. What I did hear from Mr. Williams, and I believe early on and heard again, is it's vital to maintain that independence. And I would be concerned about compromising that right now. We are going to be laying the bill over today, and I'm not sure that I've ever attended a meeting, frankly, where I've heard so many good ideas on sharpening something up. Let's move the – I'm going to amend it to my motion to move it to data privacy practices. I'm going to defer to my CA for the proper language. But this has been a really helpful discussion. I think we've come up with some really good ideas.
All right.
Mr. Chair, before you
yes, make Representative. A
motion. Thank you. Just before you make the motion, I wanted to correct something, too, as I delved a little bit deeper into the bill. One thing I didn't realize is that it's actually all of the regional or local jails are included as well.
It's getting bigger and bigger.
And lockups and workhouses and work farms and detention and treatment facilities and juvenile treatment facilities. And it's very, very expansive. So I'm not sure if that was your intent. I'm not sure.
There were two bills initially, and I accepted the language that came over. Sure. So, yeah, we got a number of things to work out here. So if the chair would restate the motion.
All right. Well, what I'm hearing is that we should lay this bill over and work on amending it and then pass it out next week.
Do a lot of work in between.
Yeah. So moved.
All right.
With that, the chair lays it.
All right, so with that, the chair is laying the bill over. Members, are there any further questions or comments?
I would.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for looking into that, for laying the bill over and to tightening it up, because I think that the language is a little different than your initial intent, so I appreciate the fact that you'll come back and tighten it up. And it's one thing to say the ombudsman for those that are incarcerated in our 11 prisons is something wholeheartedly different to say everything that's in this bill, which is pretty expansive. I don't even know the number off the top of my head, so I don't even know how many are incarcerated in all of our local jails and treatment homes and. So I don't even know where that would land us, but much more than 120,000 folks. So I appreciate that you would lay this over. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, actually, for pointing these out. We don't want to go forward with a bill that has a lot of holes in it, so I appreciate the discussion we've had today and getting it right.
Very good. Members, any further questions or comments? Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.